Good to see you guys. It's been quite a while. I just want to say I am a little nervous, and I do get red really fast, so, you know. but now all the pleasantries aside, let's get into the Word of God. If you have your Bibles, please open them up. If not, I'm sure they'll be on the screen. Luke chapter 8, verse 22 through 25. I don't know if the words are going to match up because I have a different translation. One day he got into a boat with his disciples, and he said to them, "Let us go across to the other side of the lake." So they put out, and while they were sailing, he fell asleep. A windstorm swept down on the lake, and the boat was filling with water, and they were in danger. They went to him and woke him up, shouting, "Master, Master, we are perishing." And he woke up and rebuked the wind and the raging waves, and they ceased. And there was a calm. He said to them, "Where is your faith?" They were afraid and amazed and said to one another, "Who then is this that he commands even the winds and the water, and they obey him?" Before we get into the text, I just want to go over some miracles that we've seen before and that the disciples saw. Luke 4, verse 33 to 36. A demon-possessed man was exorcised in Capernaum. Luke 4:38, Simon's mother was healed of a high fever. Luke 5:1-10, Peter catching too many fish. Luke 5:12-14, lepers healed. Luke 5:18-26, the paralytic healed, who also had his sins forgiven. Luke 6:6-11, Jesus healed the person with the man with the withered hand on the Sabbath. And then the rest of Luke 6, basically what are known as the Beatitudes or the Sermon on the Mount. And there were other things that happened. There's not enough time to talk about all of them. But now they're here. They finished one of their... It was at the end of the day. They had their... Jesus had his sermons. They talked. And he said to his disciples, "Let us get into the boat and go over to the other side." And so they did. And that's why I want to read verse 22 and part of 23. One day he got into a boat with his disciples, and he said to them, "Let us go across to the other side of the lake." So they put out, and while they were sailing, he fell asleep. And I got stuck there for a while. I was like, "Lord, what is this?" You know? I see them that they listened. They did the thing that he asked. They got into the boat. They got onto the water. I mean, the boat was already in the water, but they got into the boat and they started sailing. And while they were sailing, Jesus fell asleep. And it was kind of weird. Jesus doesn't really fall asleep too often, at least not in the... all the Luke, the Gospels, there we go. It doesn't seem like he falls asleep too often, but here he does. And as I was thinking about it, an idea came to me. And it says, "And while they were sailing, he fell asleep." And I know now Jesus doesn't need sleep. And I'm sure then he did, which is why he slept. But while we're doing the thing that God asks us to do, a lot of times it feels like Jesus falls asleep. And I know we're in the will of God, but we kind of get the hang of things. We understand how church works, fatherhood, being a good husband or wanting to be a good husband, and we kind of let him fall asleep, if I may, in the sense we don't go to him as much anymore. We're like, God, you know, I've got this. I mean, I asked you at first. I didn't know how to do it, but you know, I kind of got it now. So you know, you can just take a break, if you will. I know you work hard, so do I. You know, right now I got it, so you can just chill. And I think even I do this. I'll tell you with what fatherhood. When that fell on me, boy, was I scared. I didn't know what to do. I guess all I had to do was keep the child alive, you know? And sometimes it feels just like that. But I was so scared. And I think I may have prayed 20, 30 times during the day. Doamne, ajută-mă cu asta. Doamne, ajută-mă și cu asta altă. Doamne, nu știu ce să fac aici. Cum îi dau lapte? Cum ajut pe maică sa? Cum facem asta? Cum una alta? It was a mess. But I saw as time went on that I didn't ask so much for help anymore. I just, you know, Lord, I think I got it. You know, I've held her so many times, you know, it's all good. You know, God, I've fed her now. We're okay, you know? And I think even in ministry and even in our walk with God, we start out wanting so much to be in the will of God. And we are, and we do our best to stay in it. But after a while, there's like a repetition of things. You come to church, there's a song, then there's a sermon, there's another song, then another sermon. And it's on and on. And sometimes I wonder, at least for me, if I had the question come up in my mind, if Jesus would not be here, would this be any different? And I was hard-pressed to say yes. But I didn't say yes. I said no, because I was just so used to it. The monotony of church, the monotony of walking this life with the Lord, sometimes you just put him to the side and you're like, God, I'm reading my Bible, I'm doing the thing, I'm trying to be a good husband, trying to be a good worker, trying to work in the church, trying to pray, trying to read, check, 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 check. And good. But then we forget to like go to God. God, what do you have me do today? Is this or this? And I want to do all these things, but are these from you or are they from me? And that's what I got from here. The disciples, they were sailing. A lot of them were sailors and fishermen, which entails being, obviously, you have to man a boat. So I'm sure, like, they knew what they were doing. And just let Jesus sleep. And now we move on to the next part, which, funnily enough, I feel like life always is like that. You go through a monotony, and then out of nowhere, a windstorm arises. Let's continue with verse 23, the second part. A windstorm swept down on the lake, and the boat was filling with water, and they were in danger. And as I said, it's just like life. Everything is going good, smooth sailing. And you can almost do life without God. Almost. And then something happens, and you can't. And your whole world is turned upside down, and you don't know what to do or where to go. But we do have Jesus. I do have an aside here that I wrote down. In my walk, whenever I stayed in the will of God, and I know this is wrong, but just hear me out. Whenever I stayed in the will of God, I always have this hope that I'll be spared from all problems. And I know it's like biblically wrong. I am well aware of that. But experientially, like, I really, really hope that God makes life super easy on this world. Which doesn't really like make sense, because it wouldn't make us any better if everything went with smooth sailing all the way across. Anyways, and then we get to verse 24. They went to him and woke him up, shouting, "Master, Master, we are perishing." And I'm sure, as I read this, I was thinking, I'm sure the disciples did all that they could. It wasn't the first time. They were fishermen. They knew that winds randomly sweep down and makes big waves, and that's just how the things go. But apparently this time around, it wasn't so. And they went to him shouting, "Master, Master, we are perishing." And it's so strange that they didn't go, "Master, Master, there's a slight wind coming from the east. I see the waves just a little bit higher. Can you just wake up and do the thing that you do, you know? Or, God, you know, I saw that my kid was not doing that well. Or I saw them straying away from you just a little bit. Can you do the thing now, you know, where you get them back? Or, God, my knee hurts. You know, like, can you do the thing and fix it?" We don't really do that often. We kind of wait till last hope. There's no hope, where our last hope is Jesus. And thank God that he actually does come through. But anyways, we do that. We try to resolve whatever issue we have, whatever problems come our way. We first try with all our might to do it our way. "God, I can do it. I think I'm strong. I've walked long enough. I can do it," you know? But maybe we shouldn't do that. Why wait till right at the end when we're about to go and go to God? Why not, like, go at the beginning? Because that's how he asks of us, to walk with him, not just ask him, "God, I'm dying, save me. Oh, he didn't save me, and then I'm gone." No, that shouldn't be how it works. Unfortunately, a lot of time that is how it works. And thank God that he's a merciful God that doesn't turn us away in our greatest need, but rather, like, open arms receives us. And then, so, I had an aside, and Unki Lazar brought this up. He said, "God will not give you more than you can handle." But I think that's true, maybe in hindsight. When you look back and you see the problem that you went through, that you were able to withstand it, obviously, because you came onto the other side. But while you're in it, it really doesn't feel like that. It feels like the waves are so high, the boat is so full, that there's really no hope. If it were not for God, then we would have perished. And I think that's the case here. "Master, Master, we are perishing." They're experienced fishermen who've for sure battled the sea, but then they realized that this is way, way above our heads. And when I think of that, like, it makes perfect sense in our walk with God. And what I mean is, he doesn't just give you things that you can handle on your own. Because then if he would, what's the use for God? What's the point of having Jesus in your life? Is it just to make things easier? That seems silly. That makes us look weaker than the rest of the world, which we're stronger than the rest of the world because we have Jesus. So what I'm saying is God may allow certain things in our lives that require us to go to him. And at first, it's a big problem and a big hurt. But if you, in hindsight, if you look at it, it's the thing that keeps you near God. And who knows, if God wouldn't have done this, maybe you would have gone away from him. And at the end of the day, God doesn't want your bodily self to be comfortable, well-fed, healthy, nourished, rich, and whatnot. He cares for your soul and its eternity and wants you to spend eternity with him. And now we get to Jesus's response, which is my favorite. Unfortunately, it's not actually in Luke. It's found in Mark chapter 4, verse 39, or just part of it. And he says, he wakes up and he says, "Peace, be still." And how many times in our lives did God utter that and just calm everything down? And I know when you go through problems, sometimes they're so overwhelming. And you just need Jesus to come in and say, "Peace, be still." And I wanna point out the simplicity of his resolution, I guess, to the problem of the winds and the waves. It wasn't, he woke up and then he's like, "All right, Matthew, you go take a bucket. You too, Peter, start shoveling out water. You, James, pull on the sail, bring it up, and let's stabilize this boat." No, God doesn't do that. He uses his miraculous power to stop the wind and the waves and to bring a calm. And I just find that so refreshing in this overly complicated world where you, if you have an issue, psychology says, here's these 39 and a half steps to do, and you'll be fine. Or you go to the, or you have a sickness, and you go to the doctor, take this, 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 and you'll be good, you know? But no, Jesus here just utters a few simple words, "Peace, be still." And the whole problem went away. I know that that makes God so amazing and so different from all the other God's little G's out there. And now we get to where Jesus talks to them and he said, verse 25, and he said, "Where is your faith?" And that is what I... What a question! What a question to ask! Because as I annoyingly made out a list of all the things that Jesus did beforehand, and that's not even all of them, but they forgot it all. You know, they forgot. All they thought of, all they saw, was the wind and the waves. That's it. Nothing else. And I find that to be so much like us. Well, me, to speak on my behalf. And so much like us, that if we try to remember back of all the good that God has done to us, I'm sure we could write down a few pages at least. But when a problem arises, we kind of forget it all. We kind of forget that God is the God who heals. God is the God who casts out demons. God is the God who from five breads and two fish makes enough to feed 5,000. We just forget. You know, and so Jesus standing there asking, where is your faith? It's such a relevant like question for us today. As we go through problems, as we go through trials, where is your faith? Remember all the good that God has done in your life, in my life, in the life of the church. Because there are many. And then we get to the end of verse 25. They were afraid and amazed and said to one another, who then is this that he commands even the winds and the water and they obey him? And I find that the answers to Jesus' question very amusing, because instead of the disciples like remembering all the things the Lord had done and all the miracles, the healings, the you name it that he's done, we don't. And I want to read 22, Luke 7, I hope I marked it right, verse 22. When they were amazed at who Jesus was, it's funny how they forgot that John asked the same thing, and he gave him this answer, and he answered them, go and tell John what you have seen and heard. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear. The dead are raised, the poor have good news brought to them, and blessed is anyone who takes no offense at me. And instead of the disciples remembering that this is what made Jesus God, they look at these, I want to say like small things that, and they were amazed about. Like the stopping of the wind. I mean, you can say that we can move wind, you know, or stop it. I can hold a big piece of paper in front of me, and that'll stop some wind coming. Or I can wave like a thing really fast, and that'll get the wind moving. And I just found it so odd that this is the thing that they were amazed about, not all the other stuff that they saw. And that's how it is, I feel like, with us too. We're so wrapped up in like these little things. We want God to do this little thing here, and we forget that God can do this much, much greater thing, this much more important thing, like the work on our soul, making us a character of God, characters and citizens of heaven, not just here on earth. And also like a real qualification, which the more I think about it, the more absurd it sounds, or grandiose and amazing, whichever camp you fall in, and I hope you fall into the latter. But the forgiveness of sins, there's only one who can forgive, and that's God alone. And they forgot about that. They forgot that God, the God, is in the boat with them. They just forgot. And we do the same. We don't have a puny God that we have to make alms and do all these things for to get a response out of. But no, we have the God who all we do is we go on our knees and pray, and he listens. That is the God that we have. That is the God that we serve. And I know the time is not flying by. So which means I may or may not finish early. But I want to get to the second part of what does this mean for us? As I thought about it, And like, if you sit and you're honest with yourself, as Pentecostals, we believe in the miraculous, and we really, really hope to see it. But if we sit down and we look, we can't come up with a miraculous, not too many examples. I know when I was younger, chiar după ce m-am întors la Domnul, I had this really bad pain in the knee, and it just wouldn't go away. So I did what any new converted Christian would do. I prayed to God. I was like, God, can you please take this pain away? Because it hurts. And he did. He took the pain away. And even, I don't know, I didn't go to the doctor. I didn't do all that stuff. But I just know that it really hurt before. And then suddenly, it didn't hurt anymore. And for me, Jesus answered my prayer with a miracle. And I have a same thing. It was a few years later. I got sick and I had a fever. And the fever, it was pretty bad, I'll say. I'm pretty good with pain. I'll sit with pain for a while and it's okay. I'm the type of person who doesn't take aspirin when I get a headache. I'll drink some water, I'll do some other things. That's way last resort. So I'll deal with the pain as much as I can. But that fever, man, it just wouldn't go away. And it kept getting hotter and hotter. And I was like, I was laying in my bed. It was the middle of the night. And I was I was shivering as well. So I was confused. Am I hot? Am I cold? I don't really know. It's just bad. And I was sitting there with the covers all the way up to here. And I said, Lord, I really can't take this fever anymore. Please make it go away. And funnily enough, he listened to me. And the fever went away. And since then, it was a good, I want to say 15 years that I didn't have a fever. This last month was the last, no, not last month, October. I don't know when that was, 2 months ago. Yeah, there we go. October was when I had a fever. The first time in a very long time. Anyways, that was at the beginning of my conversion. As time went on, as I drew closer to the Lord, I expected to see God do more miraculous things. And I didn't. And as I was thinking about this passage, I was like, Lord, I don't really see that much anymore. I want to, who doesn't want to see the miraculous? Something we could talk about, great testimony, but we just don't. I feel like these prayers that we keep bringing before you with this problem, they just don't seem to get answered. At least not in the way that we want it. And we normally want it, at least I do. God, I have this problem. Can you please help me? Gone. God, this test is coming up. Can you help me get an A? Yeah, sure, that'll work. That's what we want. No studying, no anything. Just put it all up right here. And same with m-am certat cu nevasta, Doamne, poți să rezolvi așa, fără să fac eu nimica, fără să-mi cer eu scuze pentru partea mea care am greșit-o, fără să ăsta. I don't really see God doing that often. He did sometimes, he does sometimes, don't misunderstand me, but not as often as we'd like. We don't see the magical, or the magical in quotations, the instantaneous resolution of our problems. A lot of the time, we see this long dragging out or what it feels like dragging out of a problem. And even though we pray about it all the time and we bring it before the Lord and we feel like, God, you're answering this and this and this, but this thing that's really pressing me, why aren't you doing that, you know? And I found a C.S. Lewis quote. I have a C.S. Lewis Bible. I love C.S. Lewis. He's one of my favorite authors. But I found a C.S. Lewis quote regarding this. And he says, "And I dare not leave out that hard saying which I once heard from an experienced Christian. I have seen many striking answers to prayers, and more than one that I thought miraculous. But they usually come at the beginning, before conversion, or soon after it. As the Christian life proceeds, they tend to be rarer. And the refusals, too, are not only more frequent, but they become more unmistakable, more emphatic." And if I sat down with myself, I saw that in life, that is how it is a lot of the time. And I asked God, why? Why do you do it like this? Why don't you just make everything good and go away, and all our problems just go away? So then I ask you, what does this story leave us? Is it just a nice story that we can talk about? Jesus did this thing. He calmed the wind and the waves, and they did not perish anymore. Or is it something that we just like dismiss and brush over? Oh, it happened long ago, it won't happen again, or it's not happening again. So then I asked, like, now today, what does Jesus do? Which is it's a hard question to ask, and I can only answer it for myself. A lot of the time we're so focused on this body. I work for this body. I work out. I eat well. I dress it nicely. I do all the things. And we kind of forget our soul. We kind of forget to take care of this thing that we're going to take into eternity, because we're so focused with this thing that's on this earth now. And how do I say this? And I came up against an impasse, which is a lot of times, and I didn't talk to Pastor Gog about this. We didn't share about what we were teaching, what we were preaching on. But a lot of times, when we get used to it, when we are so focused on the wrong thing, God does something to bring us back to Him, brings in a problem, and I think that's one of the greatest mercies that He has for us. Because if not, like, who knows how far away we'd go in our own well-being, if I may say, in our everything is going great. I think God is more worried about our soul and our mind and our character than He is worried about this body. And even though problems may come, God does something else, which I think even greater than just the resolution of our problems. He calms the storm going on in here and in here. And a lot of time I've asked God, why do you do that? Why calm the storm? I'm sorry. Why calm the storm in here when you can just fix the problem? You know, that's my problem. This is the problem, this thing that's nagging at me, this sickness. My child is not coming home. my dad is not listening to me. My mom is too busy with other things. God, why aren't you fixing that problem? And he says, I want you to rely on me and on me alone. And I think that's the work that God is doing in us. I can't promise. I wrote it down, and I think I'm going to read it verbatim so that, you know, the nervousness of being up here doesn't cloud my mind. I said, sure, it would be nice to see the miraculous fixing of our problems, but if we employ that logic and expectation, then we treat God and think of God more like a genie, where we rub the lamp, say the right things, and say the right words, and do the right things, and poof, everything is all good. The problem goes away. But if we look to eternity, I fear that would make us more like spoiled children than children of God, fit for the eternity with him. And we miss out on the most important thing, walking with God. Because walking with God is where you get to know God. We strive so much for the actions of God, but we forget about the heart. And that's what he wants for us. He wants us to walk with him and experience peace, not with our problem at our back, not with, oh, I put it out of my mind, I'm chill now, not with, you know, God, I'm just going to pretend that doesn't exist, so, you know, I'm just going to go on with my life. No, God wants you to stare the problem straight in the face and still be at peace. Because no matter what, God is God. And at the end of the day, he wants your heart. He doesn't want your things. And so, I want to finish with this. I cannot promise you that the problem or the sickness or the relationship or the impasse will go away if you pray to him. Because I can't promise that. A prayer is a request, and God may not grant it, and that's his will. But I can promise you this, that he will walk with you, and he will give you a peace that you would have otherwise just heard about other people. You hear about that great man of God, that in the midst of trial, in the midst of the worst thing that he could face, he was still at peace, and he could still love God. You're going to know that instead of just hearing about it. And then you could tell others, because at the end of the day, what would make a greater testimony? Would it be, I prayed to God, and God fixed it. I prayed to God, and that thing that's been staring at me in the face is gone. Sure, that would be great. But other religions and other people pray to their gods to do the exact same thing. So if our God does it, and I'm sure to some capacity, their gods do it too. But wouldn't it be a much greater testimony to say that, yes, I am going through this problem, but I have a God who's walking with me. I don't need it fixed because I have him. And then if it gets fixed now or at the end of days, it doesn't matter because I have him and I walk with him. And they'll look at you and wonder, that peace, where does it come from? Where is that? What is that? And they'll be curious because that, in how I've experienced, is more of a show of who God is than just fixing our problems. Because after we fix our problems, I've seen so much. I've done it so much. And I detest myself for it. But after the problem is gone, I kind of go back on autopilot. I read my Bible, but I don't think about it. I pray, but my mind's elsewhere. And I just go on, and Jesus, to me, falls asleep again. And so, if you ask me, what would you rather have? Jesus asleep in the boat, or Jesus walking with you? After all, Genesis says that Enoch walked with God. He didn't have God as a personal fixer guy. No, he walked with God. And that's what set him apart. And that's what sets us apart as Christian and as his children. I'd like to finish with a story, I guess. Most of the times when you hear of these kinds of sermons, these stories, you always hear of them at the end, when all has passed, when the trouble has gone. They stand up and they talk and they tell of what God has done. But today I have a kind of a different story. This year has been, an especially difficult year for my family. Since the new year, we've been wanting a child. So we started trying again. And 8 weeks later, Amafla Kampiardut, Sarcina. And so, oh, thank you so much. Thank you, Susha. And so, this bitterness started to set in. I didn't know why. I asked God, I'm like, God, children are from you, you know? Why do you not, like, give me a child? But why do you give me a child and then take it away? You know? And that was tough. I braved it out. I put on the face. I said all the right things. Don't worry, I know what the Christian words are. Oh, it's all in God's hands. God will take care of it. I know. But in here, this bitterness was setting in. And I set up a wall for God. And I said, Lord, how can you let this come upon me? Thankfully, that didn't last too long. And a month or so later, of course, we talked to our doctor. Our doctor said that we can continue trying. And so we did. And lo and behold, Anna got pregnant. And all was good. Except this time around, I wasn't happy. Or as happy as I was the first time I found out. Because the bitterness that I left in there walled off who I should have been. I should have been happy. As a father, I should have been happier. And I couldn't because I was afraid. I was afraid that I'm going to lose my child again. And so for the next, oh goodness, how was it? The next maybe 6-7 weeks, we went to the doctor, and the doctor knew of, like, Anna's condition, and they gave her meds for it, and everything was okay. And we talked to the doctor, and after 6 weeks, she said, if the heart is still beating at around 6 weeks, then you're pretty much in the clear. There's only a 10% chance of losing the pregnancy. At that point, I started trusting not in God so much, but in medicine. They had the answers, or at least the answers that I thought I wanted. And I still didn't trust them fully, because when you don't trust God, you don't trust much else either. Everything, you're cynic about everything. So here I am. It's week 12, and you know what they say. After week 12, you can start telling everybody, because woohoo, everything is all good, and likelihood of pregnancy loss is very, very low. So week 12 comes about, and I just started, like, letting God unravel me, and, like, started warming my heart that was so frozen over. And I started letting the happiness and the joy of having another child come into my soul. And for the next 8 weeks, we were just so happy. It was great, and it was good. And then we went to the 20-week ultrasound, you know, where they do the anatomy and all that stuff. And we went there so happily, because finally we get to see our baby girl. Oh, we're having a baby girl. Yeah, finally we get to see our baby after, like, so long of waiting. And we go to the ultrasound, we see her. And, of course, it's amazing. Like, you get to see your baby. And we, after that, we go home, and we're very happy. But that day, about an hour or so after we got home, we got a call from the doctor of probably the worst thing that you want to hear. And they said, "Hey, we need you to come back in, because we saw some things, and your baby might not be okay." And at that point, my whole world turned upside down. It's one to lose a child, but it's another to have a sick child. And now we're back into it again, back into the thick of it all. And I ask God, why? Why do you let this come upon us? How could you let, like, such a difficult year get even more difficult? For those who have children will know the feeling. When you hear there's something wrong with your child, God, you would trade the world, anything, everything to make sure they were okay. So we went back to the doctor. We even did a... We went and did the genetic testing, not an amniocentesis where they stick the needle into the placenta, but the one where they take Anna's blood and then they find the fetal cells and determine some things from it. And we went and did that. And let's say waiting for that was one of the most difficult things that you could wait for. And during all that time, I said, God, you are with me, and whatever happens is in your hand. But I lied to myself. I didn't let God. I still tried. I wanted to go to the doctors. I wanted to see all the things. I wanted to know, as if knowing could help in any way. It can't. But we did anyways. We said, medicine it is. And we just stayed like that until, I don't know, it was 2 weeks, I think it was September. In September, we went and we saw, no, it was October. We actually saw, like, a specialist where they go and do like a ultrasound, and they look at all the things in even more detail than they did before. And we went there happy. Happy no. Oh, I didn't say that test, the answers that they came back, it was negative. The child doesn't have Down syndrome or trisomy 18 or 21 or any of the sex-related disorders. So we went there all happy and everything. And we get to the ultrasound. They do the ultrasound. And this time around, there is no waiting for a doctor. The doctor's in there with you. And while they were doing the ultrasound, they said, oh, the thing that we saw on the intestine, it's gone. The right foot with the club feet, I think it looks normal from here. And when they said that, oh, we were so happy, you know, so hopeful. We did our research, we knew our things. But then they said, but there's other things, and I think they're worse. Back at it again. And I could hear God in the back. I put God way in the back. And I could hear God saying, just trust me. Just trust me. But I said, no, God, I want to know. No, God, I want to see. And they said that she may have some neuromuscular disorder. And that's really not what you want to hear when you go there. So we went from there happy and even more devastated than we were before. And that's medicine. I entrusted myself in medicine. And I was so bitter towards God. And I said, Lord, why? Why are you doing this to us? Why are you letting this happen? I try to be a good Christian, a good father. You know the deal. I do the reading, I do the praying, you know all that good stuff. I do it all. Why? Why are you letting this happen? And at some point, there was like a shift in my thinking where it was God letting this happen to God causing it. How silly am I that God, I would think that God would cause such a thing? But thankfully, that was the end of my fall, so to speak. The next few weeks, I was talking with Anna, and I was like, "Draga, așa de greu a fost anul ăsta, deci incredibil. Like, nu, it's just, it's way above my head." And I started reading again more. Fervently and more regularly. And one morning in church, as I was sitting next to Anna, I was, it's so funny, I was thinking, God, such a difficult year, such a difficult year. And the band started singing a song that I've heard before, but like sometimes you hear a song for the first time and you know you hear it for the first time. And it's called Another in the Fire by Hillsong. If you heard it, you know, and it started like this. There's a grace when your heart is under fire. And when he said that, I'm like, well, I think that's it. I think that's me. And it's funny that a song would start it. It would start this avalanche of me letting God be God. And then they sang the verse, and they got to the chorus, and they said, there's another in the fire standing there with me. There was another in the water holding back the sea. And that was it. That was the moment I realized I was never alone this whole time. Even though I let myself be alone, I wasn't. Jesus was there in the boat with us. And from that day on, I wouldn't say that the calming of the waves didn't happen then, but it was the start. It was the me waking up, Jesus, Master, Master, I'm perishing. Save me. And so Jesus did the thing that I didn't want him to do. I wanted him more than anything. God, make my child well. Make her okay. There's still time. She's still in the womb. Not that you can't do it after, but if there's a time, do it now. And I don't know if he did. I don't know if my daughter's healed. I don't know if everything is okay. I wish I knew, you know? I wish I knew that my daughter was going to be a perfect, healthy little child, which she may be, but I don't know. But I do tell you one thing that I do know is that Jesus calmed the wind and the waves in my soul and in my heart. Because that is the God that we serve. It's not a God who always does things, but he's working on in here. And as Pastor Gog said, maybe there's something greater after this. But for now, I just don't know. I wish I knew. Boy, I wish I knew. But I don't. And so I'm still in the water. He calmed the seas. My heart is calm. My mind is calm. There were nights when I couldn't sleep. Guess what? I can sleep. And sometimes Anna's jealous now because her belly got bigger that she can't sleep as well as I can. But I can sleep, and I can do that only through him and his power alone. My daughter's due in June. No, not June. That'll be quite a long way. But in January 19, that's when she'll be born. So I'll know then. I'm not out of the water yet. I'm still on that boat that there's still water in. There's still water in, and it's sailing to the shore. But I know one thing. God has calmed this storm inside me. And if you go to him, he will do that to you too. He may not solve your problem. He may not solve your sickness. Maybe he'll reserve that for when we get to eternity. I mean, he's got to save some stuff for when we get there, you know? But I'll tell you one thing, that he will calm your heart and your soul, because that is the God that we serve. And I want to finish with this. This is the thing that has kept me going even when I was a little bit farther, even when I was farther from God. It's one of my favorite psalms. God, I love the psalms. But it's one of my favorite psalms. And it's just the last verses. Psalm 42. It says, "Why are you cast down, O my soul? And why are you in turmoil within me? Hope in God, for I shall again praise him, my salvation and my God." One day, I don't know if she comes out sick. What can I do? I'll face it. But one day, God will make all things well. But until that day, if you find yourself in the slumps, if you find yourself that you just can't get through it, just remember that Jesus is there. Just reach out. That's all.